Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Fulgham. This is The Sandman, Issue 61, The Kindly Ones, Part 5. The cover of this is Clay and Thread Figure, Silk, Microscope, Photography, and Macintosh, obviously all put together on the Mac with Photoshop. Dave McKean mentions a beautiful old microscope found in a friend's antiques shop and another odd figure with Neil's face on it.
Yeah.
So that's Neil's face.
I thought that was Neil's face.
Yep.
I like this whole moon hand thing that's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably less useful than a hand, but yep. Next best thing for sure.
Yeah, we've seen some crescent moons on a few covers.
Mm-hmm. And there's a man on the moon kind of figure up in the top left.
Oh yeah, it's the moon with the bullet in its face from that movie, The Journey to the Moon.
What?
A Trip to the Moon. This is from 1902, Voyage dans la Lune.
Oh.
It's basically one of the first science fiction movies, I think. Like it's where they're actually able to use kind of weird special effects and stuff, like, you know, filming tricks. Hold on, let me get to the moon part.
So it's a bunch of wizards in a cathedral.
Yeah. I don't know the full details. I remember this part. So they load everybody up into this bullet, and then the bullet's in a big gun, and they fire it at the moon, which is very bad because going from moving zero to moving really, really fast to go to the moon is really bad for humans. Okay, kaboom. And then they wave goodbye to all the people who are going there, and here's the moon.
Uh-huh.
And it zooms in, and then you see the face of the man in the moon.
Oh.
Oh, and he gets hit in the face. And then it fades to a drawing of the moon and people on the rocket popping out.
Oh, those wizards can breathe in space.
We made it to the moon. Well, it was 1902. I don't think it was well known that there was no atmosphere there or that they just didn't care. It's about wizards shooting a bullet full of people to the moon. I don't know what it's about.
There's a lot of people on that bullet. They did not pack food.
Maybe they're wizard clowns. So it's like a clown car and they can all fit in. Or maybe they're Time Lords.
Also, the bullet just disappeared.
Maybe that wasn't the moon of Earth. Maybe that was Gallifrey.
These are some really cool effects.
Right, for 1902? Like, this is a really big deal.
I would be stoked if I could make this movie in my living room.
It's a 1902 French adventure film directed by Georges Méliès. It was inspired by a wide variety of sources, including Jules Verne's novels From the Earth to the Moon and Around the Moon. The film follows a group of astronomers who travel to the moon in a cannon-propelled capsule, explore the moon's surface, escape from an underground group of selenites, which are lunar inhabitants, and return to Earth with a captive selenite.
Oh, wow. How do they get back to Earth?
I don't know. We could watch it. It's all on YouTube. I'll put the YouTube of this film up in the show notes, up at thedreaming.motivedust.com. Go check that out.
Cool.
Yeah. It was named one of the 100 greatest films of the 20th century by the Village Voice, ranked 84th.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no Jurassic Park.
It's about on the same level of scientific accuracy as some of the later ones.
I'm not mentioning later Jurassic Parks. I don't even know what you're talking about. There was only one Jurassic Park movie.
Oh, if only. If only. Anyway, yeah, that's that little guy up in the corner. There's some other astronomical stuff going on as well.
Yeah, bottom right, there's a sun, and then it looks like the moon is in his mouth.
Yeah, and we can see even behind, it looks like there's some stars and orbits and things going on there.
Yeah.
Kind of science-y, kind of planet-y. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it is at all relevant to this issue?
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it does it?
No, not really.
But it's hard to say what's happening in this issue. We kind of mentioned it before we started recording that not a lot happens.
Yeah, it's kind of transitionary.
This is, yeah. We do learn some stuff. It's not boring, but like the action in this is pretty still.
Until just, it becomes very
until the
explosive.
End. Well, why don't we get into the inside? And we're back inside with Lyta, who is meeting with Steno and Uriali. Found out how to pronounce that name.
The Gorgon sisters.
The Gorgon sisters. The sisters of Medusa.
Formerly triplets.
I don't know if they're triplets or just sisters. I don't know if they were technically born at the same time.
Hmm.
But yeah, sisters. And they really want Lyta to be their sister.
Bad news is it appears she slept over. She wasn't supposed to sleep over. The three-headed snake told her not to eat or sleep over. but she ate and then she slept over.
Sleep in their house, eat this food? Well, wouldn't recommend it, that's all. Not recommended there. Word to the wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last thing we saw of her was her eating one of the golden apples. Mm-hmm. And then she wakes up on this couch. I like this line about gods, where one of them says, "They never liked us, did they?" And the other says, "Gods don't like. They love and they hate and they ignore." It's very true. You never get a god who's like, "Oh yeah, I like you. You're fine." They're just extremes all the time. If they liked us, they wouldn't have let that young man decapitate our darling. I saw a really good statue recently. It's Medusa holding Perseus's head that Ooh. She cut off.
Yeah. Is it an old statue or is it a new statue?
No, this is a new one.
Oh, cool.
It's in Florence, Italy.
Nice.
I got a Twitter link to it being made. So it was cast 10 years ago. Put the image of the statue up in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Well, Lyta didn't sleep well, had some dreams.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see her ghosty dream version of her son. And a ghosty dream version of her husband, who does not look like a hottie in this picture.
Well, he's been dead for a while.
Love is apparently blind.
I guess.
I'm sure he's got a great personality.
Mm-hmm. Did you dream of your father?
I never knew my father.
Ah, probably a god. They never seem to care where they spurt their seed, not keen on their responsibilities as fathers, gods. I think that remains to this day. We don't know who Leda's father is still.
No.
But we're pretty sure it's a god because she's so darn strong.
Well, her mom was all heroic and strong, though.
That's right. She was the daughter of the original Fury.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't know who the father was. So she could be the daughter of a god and the original Fury.
Or she could be the daughter of the original Fury and Superman.
I don't think the timing checks out, but there could be time travel going on, sure.
Yeah.
Superman's kind of a god.
He is.
I think he does. He's not like most gods, though. He does feel pretty responsible for where he spurts his seed. Because, you know, with the muscular behind it, it comes out like an artillery shell. So he's got to be careful.
Uncomfortable to think about. So they offer her a glass of water. And just as she's taking a sip, her hair gets thirsty and it takes a sip.
Yeah. Yep. Only a few now, but there will be more the longer you stay here.
It's a snake. I like snakes. I wouldn't mind having snake hair. It's probably the only kind of long hair I'd be into at this point.
I guess, yeah. You'd always be hearing the hissing, though. Would never go away.
Snakes don't hiss constantly.
They would if they're in your hair, though. They'd be talking to you about, "Hey, bring us over there."
If they're anything like the snakes I've met in real life, they'd want to sleep most of the time.
I guess so.
I'd have to keep my head very warm for them.
Mm.
They'd be trying to get into my armpits, to be honest. Like pretty much every other snake I've ever held, be trying to curl into my armpit.
What would your armpit hair be? Worms?
No, it would be more snakes.
Oh, more snakes. Okay.
Or it would just be armpit hair.
Leda doesn't need gorgons. She needs vengeance.
Yeah. Aren't the gorgons a little vengeful? Aren't they avengy type?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think they go out and seek vengeance all that much.
Wasn't
if they
that
did,
what
they...
Medusa was doing? Wasn't she the mother of monsters and then she got so mad because the heroes were killing all her monsters? Or am I totally wrong about that?
That was Lilith is the mother of monsters.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've watched too much Supernatural and all the mythologies are smushed up. All the wrong mythologies are all smushed up in my head.
Yeah, that's what happens when you start telling stories and pulling from myth, is they do all get mixed up. And even the myths themselves, we mentioned it before, the Medusa story changed over time during the Greek era.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are remixing even then.
So there's a chance I could be right?
Sure. Yeah, somebody probably told a Medusa story where that was true, sure.
I mean, now that I have said it aloud, there is a version of the story where that's what happened.
At least in Lucian's library of stories that were never written.
Whoa.
Bring it right back to the comic.
Boom. Well, she looks very inhuman with all these snakes around her face, talking about how she's going to have revenge.
Mm-hmm.
I did laugh out loud, though, when I got to the, "Can I have more water, please? My hair drank most of it."
Mm-hmm.
I did, for realsies, laugh out loud.
That's what happens when you don't use conditioner. Your hair dries out. Wish I could show people the face you're making.
That laugh wasn't at your joke.
It was about me.
It was the tension built up by the look on my face.
I know, you held it for an awful long time.
Rose Walker's journal. I've been making a list of the things they don't teach you at school. They don't teach you how to love somebody. They don't teach you how to be famous. They don't teach you how to be rich or how to be poor. They don't teach you how to walk away from someone you don't love any longer. They don't teach you how to know what's going on in someone else's mind. They don't teach you what to say to someone who's dying. They don't teach you anything worth knowing. Sometimes I feel, shit, I don't know, hollow. Mostly when I don't feel what I ought to feel inside. I've got a friend who's dying from AIDS. How does that make me feel? Empty, that's all. Just empty.
Maybe like somebody who doesn't have a heart?
Yeah, maybe.
Hollow?
So did her heart get pulled out?
Well, I mean, I don't think physically. I think if they gave her an x-ray, her heart would be there.
I know. I'm just trying to remember because it's been a long while since we read Rose Walker's story.
Oh, she gave her heart to her grandmother because she was supposed to be the big thing that was going to cause all the problems with the dreaming.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be her grandmother.
Okay.
But that didn't happen because of the whole Sandman being imprisoned for some reason.
Okay.
So it got passed down. And then the grandmother at the end came and said, Rose, give me your heart. And then Dream was able to kill her.
Yeah.
To save the dreaming, and Rose got to live.
Okay, so Rose kind of gave her soul away, maybe. Something similar.
It's some kind of metaphor like that, yeah. Like, there is something missing. It's probably why she looks so young still. It gets mentioned in this one again. You don't look a day older.
Yeah.
It happens in a few pages. And we've also heard from other characters who hide their hearts away so that they live forever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it could be something like that.
And also why she's kind of just been on this super mellow kind of not emotional kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that she just kind of is missing that thing.
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well. And speaking of the characters from the other issue.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda is not looking as good.
No, we know who it is who has AIDS now.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be her friend, the drag queen. But I guess it makes sense, too, that it would be Zelda. It would be one of the two sisters because it's kind of parallel to the Gorgon sisters,
mm-hmm.
right? Where there's only one sister left of two.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gorgons is two of three.
We saw over on the first page, it was good to be three. I haven't forgotten. Twos don't work. Twos hurt and crumble. Twos fall into ones and then into dust and nothings.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening with Zelda here.
Yeah.
She's one of two and now it's crumbling and it's going to turn to one and then eventually nothing.
Mm.
We last saw Zelda in issue number 15. That was the Doll's House Part 6. She was blonde in that issue, although her hair could have been bleached. The Sandman annotations does note that several people did think it was Hal who was the one who was dying,
mm-hmm.
who was the drag queen who moved west.
Yeah.
And they're pretty sure that that was intentional misdirection on Neil's part to make you think that.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And on panel 4 of this page where she tells her little walking in the sand story, in issue 15, page 2, panel 4, Zelda has a reassuring moral homily concerning God, difficult times, and a variable number of footprints in the sand. She told it to me once, and it cheered me up remarkably.
Oh.
That's Chantel talking about that same story.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, mm-hmm. So they bring that back around.
Yep. It's sad.
Yeah, Zelda's lost her faith.
Mm-hmm.
And she's lost her sister, although they never say how she lost her sister.
Yeah.
Also, Zelda had previously, well, she still does, she stutters.
Yeah.
And that's why she never spoke before. Yeah. It was always Chantel doing the speaking.
Yeah. She asks if Rose can see her skull. And then something that I've seen in a few stories, so I'm guessing it's relatively true. Fight Club did the same with one of their characters who had cancer, which was, I'm at the end and all I want to do is get laid.
Mm.
Like just desperately need to get laid. That, I'm guessing that's a thing that happens.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm alive and that's me, so. Rose declines and points out this has been kind of requested a dozen times.
She also recoils.
Yeah.
Like, and she hasn't touched Zelda the whole time she's been sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
She, like, visibly recoils.
I mean, there's a fear, there's that fear of AIDS, yeah. Even though it takes, you know, the blood, somebody's blood has to get into your blood or something like that, even though it's like that, people were very, very afraid of it back in the day.
Yeah, this is 93?
Cover date is July of 1994, and this was in stores on May 31st of 1994.
So the height of the epidemic panic is passing at this point, right?
AIDS deaths peaked in 1995.
Okay.
So this is basically the height.
Yeah.
This is where it is terrible. Really interesting here, the AIDS deaths peaked in 1995, dropped to in 1996, and in 1997 they were less than half of what they were in 1995.
Wow.
Because we started to pay attention and figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
How to
Is that global or is that in the United States?
That's America. That's okay. All I have for America.
Excuse me. No, because also it's like what they were able to throw money at and what kind of interventions they were able to put in place.
Yeah, if you were in a country where you couldn't afford that, it was probably just a death sentence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also not getting new transmissions is a big thing. It's not just people not dying from it. It's also preventing transmission.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Yeah. People getting careful. If you can't contact it, they were better at keeping you away from people who were ill because they knew that it was an immunodeficiency and just better at handling things like that.
Okay.
I remember listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I think it was almost 10 years ago, and they had a doctor who specialized in HIV.
Yeah.
And he had said, I can't remember the last time one of my patients died from HIV.
Wow.
Because they've just the antiretrovirals, as long as you get them, I mean, your life is still not great, right? You're still having to be very careful and take these things and all that kind of stuff. But it's manageable now.
Yeah, it's more than that, too. It's basically almost impossible to transmit it if you are on these antivirals and your T-cell counts are low. Basically, it's at a point now where people taking PrEP, they cannot transmit it, even if they're having unprotected sex with their partner who does not carry it. They cannot pass it because their viral load, PrEP keeps their viral load so low.
Right.
You are at this point statistically less likely to contract HIV from a person who knows they have HIV than from someone who doesn't get tested, right? Like, that's the thing.
Right.
So that's something that, if not everyone knew this, but that's a thing that they also put, you can get on PrEP if you, even if you don't have HIV.
Mm.
That's usually what they suggest too, is that if you're the partner of someone who does have HIV, you can get on PrEP and it will even prevent you from getting HIV.
Oh, that's good.
Contracting it, that's the word.
Good.
Yeah, it's awesome, actually. Yeah. It's expensive though. So.
I believe it, yeah. And Zelda asks why Rose is doing this. She says, because I can, I suppose. And then the box later says, it's a vigil. That's what it is. It's a vigil.
So it's not really because she cares. It almost seems like it's a sort of responsibility.
She feels like it's the thing to do, yeah.
Yeah. The same way that babysitting for Lyda was a thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't need the money. She doesn't need any of that, right? Does she just do that because looking after someone's kid is the thing to do?
Yeah. She's also a writer, so I guess, experiences and knowing what death is like is probably a good thing.
Yeah, I guess.
And then Zelda wakes up and has a message from Rose's grandmother. And Rose doesn't believe her at first.
She said she was dead.
You have to go back where she lived, where she used to sleep. She said you would know what she meant. She said if you go to her, she'll give you back your heart. And Rose drops the vase of flowers.
Yeah. She knows about the heart then.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Speaking of dreams.
And then, smash cut to the dreaming. And we get to see the Corinthian learn who he is.
Yeah, this is neat. It's kind of like an it's like a scene from a movie where like an AI or whatever wakes up and it's like, what am I? Oh, I'm this thing.
Yeah.
My function is what?
Yeah.
My function is butter toast.
Oh, dear God. Yeah, welcome to the club. Yeah, in a way, nightmares kind of are AIs that Dream makes. He just makes them out of dreams instead of technology. Right? He makes his little servants. He takes Dream stuff and weaves it together and crafts the program, but he calls it a story. And there they are.
He knows he's not the first.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the first was uncreated because he was a disappointment, and the Corinthian doesn't want to be a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers a lot of these things because he has a little bit of the other Corinthian inside of him.
Yeah. He thinks that Matthew is Jessamy. Jessamy last appeared in issue 29, Thermidor. That's the one that took place during the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And Jessamy was the one who suggested that Orpheus's head sing in order to get it freed.
Oh.
Sire, yes, Jessamy. If I might make a suggestion, sire, your son knew many songs. If he were to sing...
Huh.
You might have something there, Jessamy. He still has power. But for that to be effective, he would need a chorus. And then he gives Lady Joanna Constantine the plan. So that was Jessamy, the raven back then, which was that was the end of the late 18th century. So 1790-something, I think.
The Corinthian remembers walking the waking world, which you should try saying 10 times fast.
Dream tells the Corinthian he has an errand for him and a task to be done, and Matthew will go with him, but Matthew does not like the Corinthian.
No, he's prejudiced.
He is prejudiced against nightmares who kills people and eats their eyeballs, which is weird, as the Corinthian points out. Hey, you also eat eyeballs.
Maybe he doesn't kill people to get them. Those eyeballs are just going to waste.
Yeah, fair. Once Corinthian kills somebody, then the eyeballs are going to waste, so...
He's just mad because the Corinthian doesn't have eyeballs he can eat.
Oh, that's probably it.
Yeah.
He wants to eat eyeballs, but he doesn't want to eat teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's a secret deep down inside.
And I am the Corinthian. With me by your side, you will be safe from all other harm, bird.
Is that meant to be reassuring? All other harm, right? I know. So such a perfect way of phrasing it for a nightmare, right? Only I will hurt you.
I feel like we just need to make teeth chomping noises for a little bit.
Although I don't think they chomp. Look at them smile. They're just all three sets of teeth smiling in that bottom left panel.
Yeah, no, they wait until you turn your back. Then they make the chomping noises.
Yeah, I guess. Enough. Your errand is this. Find a certain child and bring him here.
I wish I talked like that more. Instead of being like, can you go get me the thing? I'd be like, your errand is this. Open the fridge and find the beverage sweet.
You shall fetch me the Diet Dr. Pepper and bring it post haste.
The elixir of the Dr. Pepper.
And then we're in the realm of fairy.
So who's the kid? Is the kid going to be Daniel? Find me the Daniel, bring him to me?
I think so.
Right?
Don't you think that's it?
Maybe I'll save my thoughts for my prediction that you always ask me for and then I don't know what I'm going to say.
Okay. So we're over in fairy.
Mm-hmm. Fairy looks kind of boring now. I expected it to be a little more fancy.
Yeah, this one is pretty standard medieval look.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have Queen Titania greeting Nuala.
Her underdressed servant dude.
Yeah.
Like everyone's got all these cute clothes on.
Yeah.
And he's like,
I think that's her human, right? She usually has a little human boy.
Oh.
Who she keeps in as a little like slave person.
Okay.
And I think she's constantly replacing them. Remember, she keeps falling for little boys and wanting to steal them away. And that's why they have changelings and stuff like that.
Oh.
I think that's what that is. I think that's a little human.
Creepy.
Yeah. Fairy. Titania's not good. Fairies are not good. They're not necessarily evil either, but they're not good. And you can see here, like, she really wants the necklace.
She's also just so backhanded. Like, like, oh, I hope you didn't think I'd exiled you for life, Nuala. I hope you hadn't been too, you know, like she exiled her and didn't say it was going to end. So, of course, Nuala thought it was for life.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, I hope you weren't distressed thinking it was forever. Of course I wouldn't do it forever. You silly girl. Like, so mean.
Yeah.
Like, insults her glamour.
Yep.
As if it was supposed to be better looking.
And you might look better with a few more curves.
Like, mm-hmm. whatever. And yeah, and then kind of like implies with the necklace, like, would you give it for me if I asked for it?
And she has a great response. Oh, I would have to admit it was a gift, m'lady, and not in my power to give, if, of course, you were to ask. It's all very dealing with the powerful royalty and not wanting to annoy them, but figuring out the right way to say no.
Yeah.
This bores me. Farewell.
Ugh. I should end every conversation like that.
Me, 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 me. Me, me. Did he ever speak of me? Yes, of me? Do you have any messages for me? Would you give this to me? This bores me.
Well, it's not just that. She also can't say, Dream doesn't give a crap about you. She has to say, like, well, I wouldn't have known because I'm not a person who he would have talked in front of. You know, like,
yeah.
She has to kind of lie.
I don't know if it was lying, though, because often saw her just, you know, in a hallway washing a window as Dream would walk by. So I think she wasn't all that privy.
It's true. So, like, why did the queen send her there? Did the queen think, oh, I'll send this fairy there and then she'll become, like, buddy-buddy with him and, like, learn all the stuff? She didn't send her as a spy. If she wanted to send her as a spy, she should have actually sent her as a spy.
Well, I think if she'd done that, Dream would have known.
Sure.
So I think she did it just because she felt she had to and didn't really care. But then decided, well, now I'm not getting what I wanted, so I'll get her back. And then once I get her back, I'll see what I can get from her for me. Me, 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 me. Me, me, me. That's Titania. Me. One had hoped that her time in the dreaming might have taught her better manners. Majesty.
From who?
Dream's pretty polite. Dream is very polite until you cross him.
I guess. So Rapunzel's in the window.
Kind of, yeah. And the roses. And there's a little boggart.
A little boggart. I thought that was Puck.
It kind of looks like Puck with wings, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's got Puck's face.
Yeah, it's similar looking. It could be Puck.
Mm-hmm.
Shape-shifted. And he starts off with a poem, but she won't let him finish.
Yeah.
I dreamed of kittens who were born to neutered puss, then dreamed about a body buried in the corn. Be sure your sins will find you out.
Away, foolish little boggart.
But I've three more verses and an envoi, and I must tell them to only you, lady.
Enough and away, I say.
So it sounds like that was a thing that was supposed to get communicated somehow, and she said no.
Well, okay. When you start your important communication with weird rambling about kittens born of neutered puss, people are going to shut you down and not want to listen to you.
I agree.
You need to self-edit.
Yes.
Get to the important things first. Don't start with a weird thing about dead people and corn.
Mm-hmm.
And then this fantasy about her boon.
Mm-hmm. I could always call you, and if I did give in and call, what then? You'd bolt toward that bitch and kiss her hand, then bow too deep and walk, and or minuet. How fitting that Lord Oberon is horned. The horns mean that you are cuckolded, meaning that somebody is sleeping with your wife.
Oh.
It's an old thing that horned means that you're a cuckold.
So she's certain that if she called the boon, that Dream would just go be with the queen.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's like mad that he wouldn't come for her.
But it's her boon.
Yeah. But I can call you. I can always call. It's her one little thing.
Yeah. Huh. And she's going to waste it saving her brother in the future. Ugh, her ungrateful brother.
Now, here's an interesting thing. We really see it on this page. This drives it home. We didn't mention it in the previous issue. Look at the back splash behind the panels and the colors on these two pages. The previous one is white. This one is gray, like a kind of a gray blue. But up in the top right corner, where she blinks back to the world of reality, it's white again.
Yeah.
And now if you go back through these comics, these issues, Every single dreaming or in the weird fantasy world has the gray-blue background, and every single reality scene has the white background.
So fairy is in reality.
Fairy is real. It's not a dream.
Yeah.
It's not a fantasy. I mean, fairy's weird and fantastical, but it's real.
It's its own realm. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're getting hints of that with the art like that. Cool. Really cool. It actually happened in the previous one when she took the bite of the apple, because it went from fantasy world to she was in the alley. And that one also goes from the blue-gray fading up to white on the bottom.
Makes you want to go through them all and see.
Yeah, right?
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still talking to these sisters.
Yeah. She's at their gate, it looks like. She's about to leave.
We give you gifts as you leave. We give you claws of brass. We give you the nimbic glimmering. If you had stayed with us, we could have given you life until death.
Don't I get that anyway?
That's what we liked about you. You were so funny.
And then we see that they do have snake hair.
Yeah.
And a spider.
Yeah.
So it kind of is Zelda and Chantel, sort of.
Oh, because it's both the spiders and the snakes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dressed like brides, the way that that Zelda and Chantel did with the mm-hmm. nails.
I couldn't find a reference for nimbic glimmering, but I was able to track down claws of brass. That's okay. Actually from the Greek myth about Medusa. This is from Charles Kingsley's The Heroes or Greek Fairy Tales for My Children, which was reprinted in 2006 as Heroes of Greek Mythology. It was first published in 1923. And in the mirror of the shield there appeared a face, and as Perseus looked on it his blood ran cold. It was the face of a beautiful woman, but her cheeks were pale as death, and her brows were knit with everlasting pain, and her lips were thin and bitter like a snake's. And instead of hair, vipers wreathed about her temples and shot out their forked tongues, while round her head were folded wings like an eagle's, and upon her bosom claws of brass.
Huh.
So they're giving her Medusa things.
Yeah.
I'm guessing nimbic glimmering is a reference that Neil knows that I just haven't been able to track down.
Or it just sounds cool.
I mean, it is, yeah. And then she smiles and walks away.
Meanwhile, in reality, mm-hmm. in our reality, well, yeah. in this reality.
In the comic book reality.
The police station. And a weird choice to make the cop at the police station have red hair.
Because that was confusing. Weird. Yeah.
Unless that's also Loki.
But if it was, I think he would have been better at covering. Like, if this is Loki, I think he would go, oh, yeah, I know Pinkerton or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Right, Pinkerton. Yeah, I'll get on that.
Except he's not giving her any information, which is what's making her feel crazy.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah. She is kind of talking crazy, though.
Yeah, of course.
Now, Lita's not very well balanced. She used to dress up in costumes, you know. Then she got married and pregnant, and she vanished for a few years. When she got back, she was still pregnant, and it was like her mind wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, telling us about her agoraphobia, mm-hmm. staying in the house. Yeah, she describes the Pinkerton and Fellows,
mm-hmm.
and the cop doesn't recognize them at all. They don't sound familiar.
And then she pulls out a blank card and goes, look, they gave me this. Like,
yeah, that's where, like, I think it just gets extra crazy.
Well, she even says, I'm sounding like a crazy person now, aren't I?
Yeah.
Thanks again. We'll get back to you.
As she's leaving, the old man
mm-hmm.
Recognizes her and has a message for her from yeah. Lita. Or about Lita, rather.
Yeah. Your friend, the mean one. I seen her. She's got snakes in her hair. And she's not alone in her head anymore. Hey!
It's all true.
He's totally right, yeah.
So he can see, maybe delirium has touched him, and that's why he can kind of see into
yeah.
what's happening in these other worlds.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's seeing those other worlds too.
So she heads to Lita's apartment, and the first shot has just the creepiest jack-in-the-box open doll there,
mm-hmm.
which is very creepy. But then I think the right below it, I think I recognize that doll.
Yeah, that's Gregory.
Yeah.
Mark Hempel's character from the Gregory comics. Gregory. Mm. And she picks up the photo of burned Daniel.
Yeah, what a horrible picture to pick up. First of all, even if what happens next didn't happen, mm-hmm. how horrible would that be if you're searching your friend and then you find just a burnt up picture of a baby
mm-hmm.
and you're pretty sure it's the baby?
Yeah.
But what's weird is that all of the smoke kind of, the burndy stuff comes off of Daniel, the burny stuff, whatever, keep that, it's cool. It all comes off Daniel, and he looks normal, and he says, Carla.
What the ow!
The picture bursts into flames, and it burns, like, not just her flesh, it burns her sleeve off.
Yeah.
Her sleeve is ragged up at the elbow. Like, these are like third degree burns.
Yeah. Rose even says later, you should go to the hospital. And she says, I will.
Oh, yeah. For your information, if your burn is over an inch square, you're supposed to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. Brutal. And so she deals with it. And there's a lot of medical equipment. Carla notes that that's because Lita was so worried about Daniel being hurt and her not being able to do something about it. So she's able. So she made sure to have everything. Say, Rose, do you believe in magic?
Not really, no. But that's not what you were asking me.
It's not?
Nope. What you're asking me is, do I believe in weird shit? And the answer is, yes, of course I do. I'd have to be crazy not to. I've had a weird shit life.
Weird shit. That's a good way of putting it. And it is. It doesn't have to be magic. It's just weird and inexplicable stuff.
I mean, the fact that you're friends with someone who is a superhero is also weird shit.
Yeah, they live in a weird shit world. Yeah. Also, this is a world where I think there are literally famous magic-using superheroes. So, yeah, I do believe in magic in that world. Like, I'm a skeptic, but when you're a skeptic, you proportion your beliefs to the evidence. And in the DC universe, there's a lot of evidence that magic is real.
I mean, like, don't you think that, like, the Chris Angels of our world are basically, like, magic superheroes? No. And that should make you believe in magic?
No. And we find out that Rose did believe that message, and she's flying out to England to go to where her grandmother was.
Yep.
Weird shit. You think you're the only one? And we're back to Lita again, who sees herself in the reflection of a window.
But she sees two more of herself.
Yeah, three. How convenient.
Take a moment to reflect as she's looking in her reflection.
Yeah. She notes about how she didn't really do much. I never did anything my whole life that wasn't someone else's idea. Like a girl in a mirror. Like I was watching, sitting, brushing my hair while my life went by on the glass. When my mother deserted me, when Hector died again, when Daniel was killed. The sitting, brushing my hair is probably an echo of page 9 in issue 12, where she's literally in that fake little dream world, brushing her hair and looking in the mirror. And wondering, why did she do that? Become a cheap copy of her vanished mother. It all seemed like a dream now, so hard to hold on to. Nothing's tangible anymore. So again, that's another reference to the previous time we saw her.
Yeah. When Daniel was killed, it was like the mirror was broken.
Mm-hmm.
There were only two things I could have done, and one of them would have been just to lie down and never get up again.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what she's done. She's doing the other thing.
Yeah, she's actually, she's going like full Rocky here.
Yeah.
She's pulling a strip off her shirt and she's tying herself a sweatband. Or rather, a band to hold the snakes back.
A snake band, yeah. Right now, you're just sorting everything out. Through the looking glass, as it were. Prior to doing something you can't possibly do. Not a hope, my dearie. Doomed to fail. On your own.
So the my dearie makes her sound like one of the three. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then on you can't possibly do it on your own. Excuse me, but which one of us am I? As in, is that the one who's,
yeah.
She's wondering which of the other two.
Yeah. Does it matter? No. So what does she want to do that she can't do on her own?
Take down Dream.
Yeah. And what of the kindly ones just said?
That basically. Help her.
And we're back to Carla, who's, I guess, going to go out and try to drive to the hospital.
Yeah.
Or, well, I don't know if that's her car, but go to the hospital.
I don't think that's her car. Maybe it is.
It's a pretty nice car.
Yeah. I guess she's rich.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out next issue. But this is the reveal. Your prediction was, you were right that this was Puck and Loki, right? That's what's being revealed here. That
Archie Andrews was Loki all along.
Yeah, he really was. because he says, you know, where I come from, we get 6 months of snow and ice, 6 months of mud and mosquitoes. In midwinter, the sun rises at noon, sets an hour or so later. There's never any certainty that the sun will ever come back. Someone could just stick a sharpened sprig of mistletoe through its heart and, well, game over. Winter darkness forever. For anybody who gets those references, he's talking about coming from the north.
Yeah.
And he forces her into the car.
Yeah, his cigarette turns into a gun.
Aren't I sly? It was a cigarette all the time. Because Loki's about lies and misdirection and shapeshifting and illusions and all that stuff.
There's a theory that for a human to be killed by a god is the best thing that could possibly happen to the human under discussion. It eliminates all questions of belief, while manifestly placing a human life at the service of a higher power. Where do you stand on this theory?
I don't believe in God.
You don't have to believe in God. But what about gods, eh? I love that.
Mm-hmm. This bit here at the end, he really does point out Carla's tragedy. And do you know your tragedy, Carla? It's that for all your goodwill, for all your willingness to help, you never knew what any of this was all about, what was going on. You don't know how it ends, and you'll never get to find out. And it's true, she's a character who's like, cares about other people, tries to help them, wants to investigate, seems to be getting hints of what's going on. And then as we see at the end of this page, the god shows up and goes, oh, no, you have to die now. I am the mother to Odin's stallion Sleipnir. I am the father of Fenrir's Sun-Eater and of Hel Half-Rotted and of Jormungand the World Serpent. I am Loki Scarlip, Loki Skywalker, Loki Giant's Child, Loki Lysmith. I am Loki, who is fire and wit and hate. I am Loki, and I will be under obligation to no one. What does that mean?
Yeah, who's he under obligation to?
Do we remember anything like that?
Oh, did Dream save him?
From
his dad or something?
Hmm.
Yeah, there was that episode with all the gods.
Yeah.
And they were selling the key to hell.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget how that one ends.
So at the end of it, remember Loki switched places with the Japanese god?
Oh, yeah.
And the Japanese god got put under the earth to get tortured by the dripping of the world serpent.
What a dick.
And then Dream had to let him go, but he put a nightmare in its place and then told Loki, no, it's fine.
Oh.
But you owe me.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But Loki doesn't want to owe Dream.
Loki does not like having to owe people something.
And so he's doing whatever this rampage is to not owe him something?
It might be. I think it's a hint. I don't think we have all of the data yet, but if Dream is sending out the Corinthian to find Daniel, and Loki and Puck have stolen Daniel, and Loki is doing it because he's mad that he owes Dream something, that all kind of fits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So why does... And we know Dream wants Daniel. He said that several times, right? This child is mine.
Yeah, and he's literally just sent the Corinthian out probably to get him.
Yeah. And yet again, a woman of color is treated terribly in The Sandman.
Yup.
It's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost spelled out on this page. Like, yeah, it's too bad. You don't get to do anything here.
Yeah.
You get nothing. You get to die. You get to be the character who dies to the god.
Yeah, the person who dies for real.
Yeah.
So that we all know it's serious.
Yeah.
That's what that is. It's the vehicle to the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's dying so that we all know that...
Oh, Loki's a bad guy.
Yeah, that's it. It's only there to make an impact, actually. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm glad you pointed that out because I would not have immediately noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I was just thinking that she was supposed to be us in the story, mm-hmm. right? Because she's...
I think she kind of is, too.
Yeah, she's the only character who's human and not mixed up in anything weird, who's experiencing mm-hmm. everything new.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's what I thought was the intention was that she's us. Mm-hmm. And so by killing her at this point in the story, it's like, boom, it's really big now. Things are really kicking off kind of thing.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, no, I'm glad you pointed that out. That's pretty messed up.
Yeah. And also, Ruby, who's the other woman of color who died, she died in a fire in bed.
Yeah.
And Nada's city was basically destroyed by fire. She threw herself off a cliff, but her city was destroyed by fire.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a recurring theme here. Women of color killed by horrible fire and unfairness.
Yeah.
Honestly, it feels on purpose. And I don't mean in a, I'll show those women of color.
No.
I mean like Neil's trying to tell us something. I don't think we know what it is yet. I'll be honest, I have an idea, but it's going to wait until we're done the entire series.
Yeah. See, I'm not always, my first instinct isn't to like explain it as some grand theory that someone has, although I could believe eventually there'll be a payoff. My belief is usually when, especially when women and women of color are used this way, in a trope way like this, it's not on purpose. It's just that when people make these stories, they're so used to these kinds of characters, minority characters, filling these side vehicle roles, and the characters with real growth and substance and at the heart of the story are a different type of character, usually male. And for Neil, not always. He has a lot of stories where women are at the center of it, and that's great, but they're pretty much always white women. And that's just kind of has more to do with being influenced by the greater culture than like a choice, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
right? No. And I can also see maybe after working on something for a while, making a decision about it after the fact, like being like, oh crap, I did follow into all this stuff, and so I'm going to tie this thread up. But like, I'm less inclined to believe that it's some kind of larger
machination. I totally believe you right now. Yeah. I'm just going to say there's more.
Okay. In that case, then, even then, it still kind of bothers me in that it's like the decision to do that at all, to choose to make all of your characters have this brutal thing to then make a point when that's already done. And I don't know. I have complicated feelings about that.
Sure. I think you probably still will.
Yeah.
By the end. I don't think it's going to be tied up in a neat little bow. All right. Predictions. Where do we go from here? I mean, Carla's not with us anymore. She's dead. Right? I'm not going to let you think, oh, what if she survived? She's dead.
We got to find out what Puck's been up to. We got to find out. Well, I guess the next issue could be Corinthian and Matthew hanging out.
I mean, they're certainly going on a quest together. So I think we're going to get that at some point. Yeah. And I think next issue is probably a good guess.
How many more issues till the end? How many out of how many are we into? That will help me figure out where the story is going based on how far into the story we are.
13, and we're on number 5.
Okay. So we're nearing halfway.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't really find out what happened to Daniel. That'll be a while from now. We can't.
So what do we set in motion in this one? Let's see. So we've got Lita.
We set in motion Rose going to London.
Yeah.
Lita has now got some tools. Mm-hmm. She's gone through her little episode. I think now she's ready to pull herself out of that episode.
She's got
to
go, yeah. Well, her grandmother said, I'll give you back your heart.
No, sorry. Rose has got her thing. I already finished with Rose.
Oh, sorry.
Rose is going to go to London and hopefully enter the dreaming, not London, but she's going to go to England, hopefully enter the dreaming, get her heart or whatever. She's going to be doing a thing like that.
Yep.
Lita has finished her walk through the desert and now she's ready to get to business because she's now been armed by the Gorgons, and it appears she has guidance now from the three. The Corinthian and Matthew are going to start a quest to go find the Bubby. And I don't know what's happening with everybody else.
Yeah. Well, I think those are some pretty good guesses. I think a lot of this has been set up, that this is not a lot happens here. We have Carla getting killed and, you know, the Corinthian and Matthew being sent off on a quest. But again, it's not a lot of big action. Not much in the way of changes, but certainly like the push for several characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those are good guesses. Which of those, if it focuses on one of those, which one do you think our next issue might focus on? Just a guess. Lita, Rose,
Matthew and the Corinthian.
You think it's going to be Matthew and the Corinthian?
Yeah, I think they're going to find more clues about what happened to Daniel or something like that.
I guess we're going to have to find out next episode.
You've been dreaming of the Sandman, issue 61, The Kindly Ones, part 5. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Onerai by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Fulgham. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.